America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day where I just heard some great words from the Speaker of the House. Yeah, that's unbelievable, from Mike Johnson, talking about how crucial it is that the United States actually rise to the occasion and support our allies in Ukraine. He said, I believe the intel. I believe, he said, that Xi and Putin and Iran represent an axis of evil. Well, there he was, quoting David Frum. David Frum as a speechwriter for President George W. Bush coined that term, axis of evil. He is the author of 10 books, most recently Trumpocracy and Trump Apocalypse. He's a novelist. He has chaired the prominent UK center-right think tank Policy Exchange, and he writes regularly for The Atlantic. David, you may not have heard it, but right now Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, is insisting, finally, that we have to follow through on supporting Ukraine. David, in your opinion, is he right?
He is totally right, and this is such welcome news. The delay has been terrible and shameful. In the year 2022, when there was a Democratic House, Congress passed four aid bills for Ukraine, totaling $75 billion. And that kept Ukraine fighting. It provided for the greatly successful counteroffensive of the summer of 23. But since the Republicans took over, under the influence of President Trump, former President Trump, there's been a boycott. No aid for Ukraine was voted at any time in the year 23, despite repeated requests. The president's latest request, which included money for Israel, was presented to Congress in October. No action for 6 months, no action after October 7th. This horrific Iran attack may have shaken things loose, but now it looks like there will be money for Ukraine, money for Israel, money for America's allies in the Indo-Pacific, money to replenish American stockpiles, money to safeguard the border, let's hope. This is national defense. This is national security, and it's about time.
Amen to that. And by the way, I appreciate you had a recent article under the heading in Atlantic Magazine, A Test of Strength, about Biden's stands with America's allies. Trump doesn't. And the other article that I wanted to get to right away was your argument why Biden should not debate Trump. As we have been talking about just in the last few minutes, there are very big issues here and things that are worth debating. But why should President Biden refuse to get on the stage and hash them out with Trump?
Because former President Trump is right now an indicted criminal. He's indicted for crimes against the Constitution, for an attempt to overthrow an election. I don't think it's a matter of good or bad manners. I don't think it's a matter of liking or disliking somebody. But I think there needs to be a standard that if you are the Constitution is not up for debate. And if you have a major party candidate, which it looks like Donald Trump will be, although there's still time to change the mind about that, who is under criminal indictment for crimes against the Constitution, that person should not share a platform with the President of the United States, who's in charge of upholding the Constitution.
And, of course, it would be widely interpreted that President Biden was simply, because of his age and his infirmity, he was simply afraid to take Trump on in that forum. How does he counteract that?
Well, Donald Trump will say that, of course, but we also have performance at the State of the Union. Donald Trump accused President Biden of taking performance-enhancing drugs. I think there's also something that also needs to be kept in mind here about how dynamic the situation is, which is any such debate would take place sometime in the fall of 2024, sometime between in the months of September or October of 2024. Now, it's highly likely, assuming the Supreme Court does not say this summer that the former president has immunity for all criminal charges, and it's very unlikely the Supreme Court would say that. If they don't say that, by September and October, Donald Trump may actively be on trial for his crimes against the Constitution on January 6th. In addition to his criminal trial in New York for probably the least important of the charges before him, in September and October, he may be on criminal trial for the most important of the charges. And then it would be like Lincoln debating Jefferson Davis. It would be really weird that you would have someone who's on trial for the crimes of organizing an attack on an election and sharing stage with the president. I'm not sure such a person could pass the Secret Service test to be in the president's company.
Well, again, apparently one of the reports is that President Biden is personally resentful about President Trump, because when they actually did debate and they were in the same room debating, that was when President Trump already knew that he had tested positive for COVID.
That is that behavior was. That is that, I don't think that's grounds, because the debate is not it's not a matter of a favor, or it's not for the sake of the candidates. The debate is for the benefit of the public. But if you debate someone who's under indictment, criminal indictment for crimes against the Constitution, you're saying that those issues are just one among many. One other thing that needs to be said, especially in light of what Speaker Johnson has done today, I smell the spring of the post-Trump return to the Reagan Republican Party. I want to just get from here to there as fast as possible. I think you're going to see that. We're a Republican Party that takes seriously the defense of the country again, that speaks for hope and optimism again, but that fights for markets and low taxes and sensible approaches to business regulation again. That's what Republicans are for. But we've been on a terrible detour as Republicans for the past 10 years, and it's now time to rediscover ourselves and getting through this election, getting through the trials and the justice that Donald Trump has earned, and on to the future. That's the thing we need to be excited about.
Who do you – well, we will get to this, but President Trump has a big decision ahead of him, which is choosing a running mate. Your guesses as to which direction is he going to go? Is he going to get someone who has a more moderate, more Reaganite Republican tone?
I would assume that any such person would refuse to run with Donald Trump. I mean, we are on the way, very probably, to a big Republican defeat this year, and it's amply earned. I think that the people who are the future of the party may say, I don't want to be Trump branded. The Republican Party, when it regenerates from the states. People who have been effective, business-like, practical-minded governors, fought crime, kept taxes low, stood up for merit and standards in education. That's where the party regenerates from. That George W. Bush was a governor. Ronald Reagan was a governor. That's where the vitality of the party comes from. And that's where the future is going to be found, is people have been affected at the state level. Brian Kemp is one name that comes obviously to mind, but there are many others.
I'm sorry, you said the
Brian Kemp in Georgia is one name that comes to mind, but there are many, many others too.
Yes, Brian Kemp seems to be unlikely, at least according to people who are handicapping this, but more likelihood of Tim Scott is frequently mentioned. Marjorie Taylor Greene is mentioned. Kristi Noem. Tulsi Gabbard.
Tulsi Gabbard would be a perfect running mate for Donald Trump.
That's because you want to see Trump lose and lose big. Is that right?
I don't have any regard for either of them. And so I would hate to waste people who have a future defending the anti-Ukraine. By the way, have you noticed that Trump is flipping on Israel, too? He was at a Republican event where people began to chant anti-Israel slogans, and he agreed with them.
Yes, they said genocide Joe, about the president of the United States. We will be right back with someone who's been an aide to a president of the United States, President George W. Bush, David Frum. His pieces recently, and they're very important, are posted at michaelmedved.com. We'll be right back. Hey, And on the Michael Medved Show, my honor to be speaking again to my friend, much admired and justly admired, a political commentator, historian, and best-selling author. David writes regularly for Atlantic Magazine. He was a cog, but a crucial cog in the Bush administration, the George W. Bush administration, particularly on foreign policy issues. And concerning those foreign policy issues right now, we were speaking before about alliances and the importance of alliances. And your article under the heading A Test of Strength, which is posted at our website at michaelmedved.com, makes the crucial point that there really are very few issues that are comparably important to maintaining the effectiveness of our NATO alliances and our links to Israel. The Biden administration right now has made it difficult for Israel in terms of responding to Iran. What is the right course in that explosive situation?
Well, the Biden administration has offered Israel a choice, and it's a very attractive choice. It's a handsome choice. It's a good choice to have. So Israel has, and I think people sort of forget the history of the U.S. and Israel relationship. They imagine there's some golden age. And people need to remember, the United States refused to sell arms to Israel for the first 20 years of Israel's existence. The first arms sale to Israel by the United States is in the middle 1960s. There was no aid by the United States to Israel until the middle 1970s. The United States never cooperated with Israel until the 21st century. In fact, when Israel came under missile attack from Iraq in 1990 during the first Gulf War, the George H.W. Bush administration forbade Israel to retaliate in any way, had Israel to cooperate with the anti-Saddam coalition. And in that missile attack, unlike the one just now where everything was shot down, 13 people died and dozens were wounded. And Israel was not allowed to retaliate. The idea that Israel would be embedded in a thick, powerful coalition with the United States, Great Britain, France, even Jordan and Saudi Arabia, that's incredible. Now, coalition politics always comes with a price. When you're in a coalition, you have to pay attention to what your coalition partners want, even if you don't like it. And so what Biden has said is he doesn't want Israel to directly attack the Iranian mainland. You know, they're free to retaliate in Lebanon or Yemen or Syria, but not against the homeland and not with a big attack that might hit civilian populations. Some in Israel don't like that. But he said, what do you get in return? What you get in return is partners, allies. Israel has always been alone. And it's never been less alone than it is right now. And I'm not going to presume to tell the Israelis what the right choice is, but I'm going to say they have two good choices, and they usually have zero.
And in terms of those good choices, there have been comments, of course, a famous speech in the Senate by Senator Schumer, and all kinds of indications from the Biden administration that they would like to see a change of leadership in the state of Israel. Do you believe that progress can be made under the leadership of Benjamin Netanyahu?
You know what? I'm an American passport holder. I'm a Canadian passport holder. I'm Jewish, but I'm not an Israeli citizen. I don't presume to tell Israel how to govern itself. It's wrong when Chuck Schumer expresses an opinion on the government of Israel, just as it was wrong when Benjamin Netanyahu would come to the United States and engage in partisan activities that made clear his preference for Republicans over Democrats. Allies with the government of the day, whichever the government is, it's not for them to choose. And I think, and Schumer took advantage of his standing as an important figure in diaspora Jewry to express an opinion that as majority leader of the United States Senate, he should not have expressed.
And in terms of the current deal that seems to be unattainable, a deal to get the hostages home, what can the United States do to rescue those five American citizens who presumably are still alive and being held as hostages?
One of those five is a cousin of mine and whose family I've come to know. I knew the family a little before, and I've come to know them quite intimately during this terrible situation. He's a 23-year-old from Long Island named Omer Neutra. And he had, his parents were Israelis. He was an American, but he had gone back to do his military service as a volunteer, which he didn't have to do. And he was, conducted himself very heroically on the day, but was taken prisoner. Others in his tank was disabled. He was captured. Others in his tank were killed. And his family is terribly worried about him. There's a lot at stake, and there are other foreign nationals as well. Many foreign nationals were murdered: Germans, French, Canadians, British. Hamas is obviously not a good faith negotiator. They have no sense of humanitarianism, I think they respond to the language of pressure. And pressure on Iran, I think, put some pressure on Hamas as well, because Hamas gets money, technology, know-how, weapons from Iran.
And what can Israel do to actually strike back at Iran without jeopardizing the thick coalition that you were talking about that was so welcome and that worked together successfully to shoot down the drones and the missiles and the various rockets that Iran was sending into Israeli territory?
Well, I'll advert to your film expertise. I keep thinking of that scene in the first Indiana Jones movie where Indiana's at a marketplace and this swordsman arrives in gorgeous costume, waves a sword around over his head, and Indiana, who's looking very disreputable, just has this look of disgust on his face, pulls out a revolver and shoots him dead. So you don't need to make a big show. You need to strike your target. Israel's supreme objective is disabling the Iranian nuclear program. And everything they do, whether that is working to disable the scientists, whether that is cybersecurity attacks, and everything they do that disables that program, whether that is outright sabotage done in a covert way. But they don't need to fill the air over Tehran with flying bombs. When Iran did that to Israel, they won for Israel friends that they never had before, including the outright cooperation of an Arab state. This is the first time Jews and Arabs have ever fought together against a common foe. And the Jordanians say, well, we're just protecting our airspace. Nonetheless, they were working in cooperation. And it looks like they got intelligence from the Saudis and maybe some refueling assistance as well. So Jordanians, Saudis, and Israelis were fighting together against a common enemy. You don't need to put on a big show. You need to capitalize on that coalition.
And let us hope that that continues. And I let us also hope that the enlightenment and provocation that is present in virtually all of the articles by David Frum continues. That posted at our website at michaelmedved.com. We will be right back with more on the situation in the House of Representatives, with votes coming up this weekend on a crucial aid bill that would impact Israel profoundly, as well as Ukraine. Godspeed, David, and may you and your family have a blessed and peaceful Passover. We will be right back.
From politics to pop culture and from coast to coast, this is The Michael Medved Show.
On the Michael Medved Show, legal system is now moving more effectively against some of the demonstrators who believe it is somehow their right to interfere with the rights of other people, for instance, to make airplanes on time, to get to doctor's appointments, to get home to take care of their children, whatever it happens to be. There have been in Chicago, in San Francisco Bay Area, in Seattle. In Seattle, they arrested 46 of the so-called protesters who are pro-Hamas, who want to disrupt any function here in the country. But today, there was a pro-Hamas protester and film of a pro-Hamas protester who expressed his dissatisfaction, his pain actually, as law enforcement tried to remove him from the concrete barrel he had purposely put his arm into on the Golden Gate Bridge. It sounded like this.
Stop. Let go of the bar.
Let go of the bar.
Stop squeezing my hand.
Let go of the bar.
Stop squeezing my hand and twisting it. The rebar is cutting the inside of my hand. Stop prying my finger.
The bar.
Stop prying. Stop. Stop. Stop.
Let go of the
rebar. Stop. Stop. You're hurting me.
Let go of the rebar.
He's free.
He's free.
He's free.
He's free.
He's free.
Take him out.
You got the arms?
Yep.
Okay. Yes, set on the bike. The bike.
Do you need EMS? It needs to be seen by a medic.
Yes, it doesn't sound like a wonderful moment or a favorite moment for the law enforcement personnel who were actually dealing with that. Meanwhile, President Biden has been campaigning in Pennsylvania with 19 electoral votes. It is the most crucial of all swing states. It would be very decisive if President Biden actually does well, carries Pennsylvania. That's why he's campaigning there. That's why Trump is campaigning there. Why Trump in Schneckville, Pennsylvania. And yes, that is the name of the town that he made the comments, now famous comments, about Gettysburg. President Biden spoke in Pittsburgh, and he was greeted by some less than enthusiastic demonstrators. They sounded like this. This is clip six. They're chanting, hey, hey, ho, ho, Bidenomics has got to go. And meanwhile, there is more. There is and this just breaking, actually. I just became aware of this. Governor Kemp in Georgia, Brian Kemp, had some instructions on handling protesters, pro-Hamas protesters, in the state of Georgia. Do we have that on audio, Jeremy? Oh, well, what Governor Kemp said is, I know I don't need to make this call, he said, recounting his conversation, but you know how I feel about people blocking bridges, airports, and other things like we're seeing around the country. I said, if they do that here in Georgia, lock their beep up. Governor Kemp relayed his instructions to a crowd of about 300 attendees of the annual Gala for Greater Georgia, a conservative political organization launched by former U.S. Senator Kelly Loeffler. The crowd is reported to have gone wild in its applause of Trump's remarks. Trump said those demonstrations are not welcome in Georgia. We continue to send the message in this state that we're going to keep you safe and not put up with this insanity. Speaking of insanity, the reaction to Mike Johnson in the best moment of his speakership so far. And again, I give him a great deal of credit for standing up to some of the crazies and freaks and idiots in the extreme right wing of the Republican Party, the pro-Putin wing of the Republican Party. That wing is very angry about Mike Johnson. And these are various parties speaking to Manu Raju, Matt Gaetz, a representative from Florida, Eli Crane of Arizona, and Representative Tom Massey, who has now joined Marjorie Taylor Greene in calling for the removal of Speaker Johnson. This is how they express themselves about the embattled Speaker of the House. Clip five.
The abject surrender represented by his strategic choice here. There's no other way to describe it. It's surrender. It's disappointing. I won't support it.
It's disappointing. It's completely detached from what our base wants, what our voters want.
The strategy is not to try.
I think the strategy is to fall on his sword.
Okay, that's Matt Gaetz, Eli Crane, and Tom Massie. And then there was an engagement between a Democrat and a Republican, the Republican being James Comer of Kentucky, the head of the House Oversight Committee, and Representative Raskin of Maryland. Well, they had an explosive argument over both Biden and Trump and their alleged ties to the Chinese Communist Party.
What did the Bidens do?
I don't know
what
who you're
business
talking
were they
about.
In?
Well, what Biden? What business is the Comers what? In? You're talking about lots of people. There's lots of people in the family.
I'm a farmer.
Your
I have land. I
your
lease
impeachment
land.
Investigation must identify a high
Bidens
crime
do?
And misdemeanor.
What did they do?
I'll tell you what Joe Biden did. He was a senator of the United States. Then he wrote a book, and he said he made the most money ever made in his life, millions of dollars on his book, and he gave $1 million.
That's what his family did.
That's what
that's why Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Romania, China, Russia, that's why they paid the Biden family money because of Joe Biden.
None of those governments paid anyone any money.
So, somebody needs therapy here, but it's nobody on our side of the aisle, okay?
Back to the China hearing.
Your chance. I would like my time restored.
No, your time was expired.
You interrupted me. My time
you
expired.
You had your time. You went above, and I let Miss Thornton go a minute.
You know what?
Sit down, everybody. Come back. This is about China.
This is about China. This is basically... they used to call the U.S. Senate the world's greatest deliberative body. Now, this is not the Senate. This is the House. But they're not doing so well. I'll tell you somebody else who actually issued a statement today and posted it. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He writes, a second Trump presidency would be bad for the country. This is one of the people running against Trump. President Trump had his chance, writes Robert Kennedy. He failed. He said he'd drain the swamp. Instead, he filled the government with corporate insiders. He said he'd cut the deficit, but bloated it instead. He said he'd put America first. Instead, he let bureaucrats like Tony Fauci shut down the entire country. We don't know what shape the next crisis will take, but we know there will be one. When it happens, we need a leader who can be trusted to stand for peace, to stand for freedom, and to stand for truth. And of course, he believes that he is that leader. We will be right back on the Medved Show.
From politics to pop culture and from coast to coast, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, the Trump campaign and his super PAC, which is called MAGA Inc., has put up their first broadcast TV ad since January. They had a cable ad that they put up after the State of the Union address attacking President Biden. Now they have placed $1.5 million in the crucial state of Pennsylvania. We're going to be hearing a lot about the decisive nature of Pennsylvania. It'll be $1.5 million worth in Pennsylvania markets this week. The ad, of course, focused on what Trump believes will be his winning issue and his number one issue, which is immigration and the border. The ad from the Trump Super PAC sounds like this.
A defenseless young girl was brutally raped and killed by an illegal alien and known member of the violent MS-13 gang. It could have been prevented. The killer was detained at the border, but released onto our streets by Biden's weak border policies. Biden's open border puts us all at risk by releasing criminal illegals into our communities. We have to stop Joe Biden to close our border. Make America Great Again, Inc. is responsible for the content of this advertising.
And, of course, the implication being that Joe Biden wants to see criminals swarming everywhere in the United States. This is why, by the way, I'd recommend that anybody who cares about this issue check out my Substack article. It is new. Just posted on michaelmedved.substack.com. And the piece is called Good News on Crime Demands a Fresh Perspective on Immigration. The idea being that there simply is no statistical evidence at all that immigration is a major factor in the crime rate. The crime rate has been going down dramatically, even as immigration has been going up. Now, that doesn't mean that immigration going up or a defenseless border or an ineffective border security is desirable. It's not. It's very undesirable. There are many reasons to oppose unauthorized immigrants, to oppose the undocumented immigration of people. One of those reasons is basically just respect for law and order and for a legal system and for the prevailing law of the land. The other is overtaxing institutions like hospitals and schools. Clearly, this has been a problem in the United States for decades. And it's one of the reasons that when there is a bipartisan effort to strengthen border security, it seems to me that it's more important to make progress on that issue than to try to use it as a political cudgel. Speaking of political cudgels, there's a piece in Mediaite by Liz Peck. Liz Peek, actually, is her name. She is a contributor to Fox News, and she is a financial writer. And she did a scathing op-ed today for Mediaite, emblazoned with the headline, Marjorie Taylor Greene is an idiot. She is trying to wreck the GOP. And in the very first paragraph, Peek accuses Greene of exhibiting bombastic, self-serving showmanship and drama queen energy that should be aimed toward Democrats and not her own party. Speaking of aiming attention at Democrats, there were comments by Joy Reid on MSNBC. And she wanted to relate Trump's trials to issues of race. Now, that's kind of hard to do. I mean, Trump made this foolish comment that he thought that his mugshot would have special appeal to black people because they were so mistreated by the legal system, just as he was. In any event, Joy Reid answered with this. This is clip 8.
For me, there is something wonderfully poetic about the fact that despite the fact that even if convicted, he's not going to go to prison, the first person to actually criminally prosecute Donald Trump is a black Harvard grad, the very kind of person that his former staff, the people who worked for him, Stephen Miller, et cetera, want to never be at Harvard Law School. But he was. And he came out and graduated, and he's prosecuting you, Donald. And a black woman is doing that same exact thing in Georgia. And a black woman forced you to pay a $175 million fine that's out now also in question because the people who put it up, that might not be legit. Donald Trump is being held to account by the very multicultural, multiracial democracy that he's trying to dismantle. And for me, there's something poetic and actually wonderful about that. It says something good about our country that we're still capable of having that happen. Go DEI. My DEIs are bringing it home on today.
Okay, she doesn't want to acknowledge that Alvin Bragg, who she praises there, was not only a graduate of Harvard Law School, but also of Harvard College. And he's also a Sunday school teacher. He goes to an Abyssinian Baptist church and teaches Sunday school there, which does not place him, at least in Joy Reid's point of view, as a, someone of the unrespectable right. Meanwhile, we have coming up this week the biggest movie about Bigfoot. It's called Sasquatch Sunset, and it stars Jesse Eisenberg and Riley Moog, the Elvis's granddaughter. But what about a film from last year in January, On the Trail of Bigfoot, Last Frontier? A little foretaste.
Now it's time for Medved's Entertainment Minute.
After a series of movies trying to pin down the truth of the ever-elusive Bigfoot, there's a new effort by filmmaker Seth Breedlove to locate the big hairy beast in Alaska, arguably the most remote corner of the United States. The resulting film, On the Trail of Bigfoot, Last Frontier.
Sasquatches are certainly in Alaska, and they're certainly walking around, and they certainly leave footprints. They're going to be discovered eventually. They're absolutely real animals.
The movie is mostly composed of dozens of Alaskans recalling their chilling encounters with various species of Sasquatch in different regions of Alaska. The camera work is often first class, with great glimpses of the great outdoors. But though they're on the trail of Bigfoot, they're far from catching up with any definitive evidence. 2 stars for the only occasionally intriguing On the Trail of Bigfoot, Last Frontier. And yes, The Last Frontier. For the new Bigfoot movie, Sasquatch Sunset, this again involves named stars, and it gives you a more intimate glimpse of Bigfoot private life than you may want to see. But we will be reviewing that coming up on Friday. Coming up tomorrow on the Michael Medved Show, Victor Davis Hanson, who is an extraordinarily eloquent historian, basically with a focus on ancient history. But he probes some modern history in a piece under the title Gaza, Truths Behind All the Lies. He'll be telling us some of those truths coming up tomorrow when he joins the show. Aaron Rodgers will not be joining our show. No. He has falsely suggested that Dr. Fauci actually created HIV, AIDS, in a laboratory with the help of the U.S. government. Now, why would he do that? We will get to that coming up tomorrow as well. A woman also called 911 over buying a bad batch of meth. At least she made it easier for the cops to find her. And Turkish president accused Israel of attempting to orchestrate repeating coups in Turkey, and they chanted death to Israel in the Turkish parliament during the Erdogan speech. We will get to all of that